This is Not Your Average Financial Podcast, episode 342. Beware of analysis paralysis.
Traditional financial planning is no longer working. And in the new normal economy, your host, certified financial planner Mark Willis, invites you to join us as we engage the new and improved steps for establishing financial sanity. Be curious, be stable, be sane. This is Not Your Average Financial Podcast, helping you think different about your money, your economy, and your future.
Welcome, financial revolutionaries, to this week's episode of Not Your Average Financial Podcast. Today, we're taking a detour from our normal counterintuitive financial strategies to look into the surprisingly interconnected world of history, transportation, and yes, even the humble horse's rear end. Buckle up, we're going to be uncovering some hidden influences that might just shape your perspective on modern finance and your personal financial life. Now, if you're like me, you wonder weird things. You're driving down the street, you're minding your own business, you notice a train track, you cover the train tracks, and you wonder as you're driving over those tracks, why exactly are tracks spaced exactly as far apart as they are? It turns out they are 4 foot, 8.5 inches exactly spaced apart. That seems like a really random measurement, right? What is 4 foot, 8.5 inches? Well, this is a really fascinating story, and I promise it has a lot to do with your personal financial journey. So walk with me on this nerdy train track journey together. So Dr. Jörg Storm, he eloquently puts this as the exceedingly odd number, this 4 foot, 8.5 inch quandary. And he was curious about it as well. And apparently, it has a lot to do with a horse's posterior, let's say. Why was this exact track gauge used, 4 foot, 8.5 inches? Well, it's because that's the way they built them back in England. And English engineers designed the first U.S. railroads, so they brought over their conventions from England. Now, why did the English build them like that? Well, because the first rail lines were built by the same people who built the wagon tramways. And so that's why they used that gauge. Now, why did they use that gauge then? Well, because the people who built the tramways used the same jigs and tools that had been used for building wagons, which used the same wheel spacing. Now, why did wagons have this particularly odd wheel spacing? Again, if they tried to use any other spacing, the wheels on the wagon would break more often on some of the old long-distance roads in England. You see, that's the spacing of wheel ruts in the road. Okay, but who rutted out these old roads? Well, crazy to say it, but Imperial Rome built the first long-distance roads in Europe, which included England, of course, for their legions. So these roads have been used ever since. Now, but what about the ruts in the roads? Well, Roman war chariots formed these ruts in the road, which everyone else had to match, or they would run the risk of destroying their wagon wheels. Okay, so since the chariots were made for Imperial Rome, they were all alike in the matter of wheel spacing. Okay, so therefore, the United States standard railroad gauge of 4 foot, 8.5 inches is derived all the way back to the original specifications of an Imperial Roman war chariot. Isn't that fascinating? So the next time you're handling a specification or a procedure and you're wondering, what horse's ass came up with this weird convention, you might be exactly right. Okay, the Imperial Roman army chariots were made just wide enough to accommodate the rear ends of two war horses. So 4 foot, 8.5 inches is the exact specification for the wideness of the back end of a horse. So two horses. Okay, so now here's the really cool, weird twist to this story. When you see a space shuttle sitting on its launch pad, there are these two really big booster rockets attached to the sides of the main fuel tank. And these are solid rocket boosters, or SRBs. These SRBs are made by Thiokol, which is a company in a factory that's stationed out in Utah. The engineers who designed these solid rocket boosters would have preferred to make them a bit fatter. They wanted bigger rocket boosters, but the SRBs had to be shipped by train from the factory in Utah to the launch sites. And the railroad line from the factory happens to run through a tunnel in the mountains, and these SRBs had to fit through that tunnel. Now, the tunnel is slightly wider than the railroad track, and the railroad track, as you know, is about as wide as two horses' behinds. So, a major space shuttle design feature of what's probably and arguably the world's most advanced transportation system ever created was determined over 2,000 years ago by the width of two horse back ends. And you thought being a horse's ass wasn't important. No, actually, the ancient horse back end controls almost everything in terms of transportation today. Okay, so that's a cool, fun fact of history. Now, you might be wondering, what in the world does this historical trivia have to do with my wallet, Mark? Tell me, get to the point. Here's the thing. It highlights what's often unseen, the unseen forces in our financial landscape. Just like the seemingly arbitrary train track width, many of our financial rules and norms and regulations have roots in historical contingencies, let's say, not necessarily true sound economic principles. If we were building our roads today, they might be built around new ideas, new concepts. But think about it, outdated accounting practices, inefficient market structures, even certain investment strategies, they might all be carrying the baggage of decisions made centuries ago based on factors as whimsical as the size of a horse's rump. So we all have tracks, ruts in our minds that are running over and over and over again, just like those chariot wheels were making ruts in the road. And if we're not careful, we'll follow into that same rut, that same routine. And getting out of that rut can be extremely difficult until you're out. And then you realize just how easy the journey truly can be. Okay, revolutionaries, let's push this horse metaphor just a little further. Imagine you're not just riding in a Roman chariot, but you're stuck in the very ruts carved by those chariot wheels now for centuries. These ruts, my friend, represent the ingrained financial assumptions we're holding. The beliefs like, I have to invest in the stock market to reach my financial goals, or home prices always go up, or no one should own whole life insurance, of course. These are all mantras that are echoing in the echo chambers of the oh-so-average financial media, and maybe in our own heads, too. Sure, these ruts might have been smooth sailing for some people in the past, but what if your chariot, your financial journey, is headed toward a cliff? Would you blindly follow the path carved by others? Would you swerve? Even if it meant a bumpy off-ride road for a little bit, how many lives have been ruined by following the conventional investment and financial advice of other people? The truth is, many of us stay stuck in the rut, not because it's optimal, but because it's familiar. And then we get stuck in the rut that can lead us to a dangerous cliff. Okay, so of course, what am I talking about here? I'm talking about something known as analysis paralysis. What is analysis paralysis? It's not a fancy medical term, but it is a very real phenomenon of getting so bogged down in research, overthinking, second-guessing yourself, that we end up making no decision at all. I see this all the time when people are considering a bank-on-yourself type whole life insurance policy. When they're first discovering this concept, it usually goes through several phases. The first phase, they're curious, even excited. There's a lot of hope, optimism. They begin to rattle off questions as best as they can based on their limited financial knowledge. They're excited, like little kids in a candy store. And then something changes. The next time I have a phone call with them or talk to them, they seem to be drowning in research, feeling maybe overwhelmed and overthinking the smallest components of the tool. Jaded skepticism has really set in, and maybe the fear of making the wrong decision is now keeping them frozen in place. In fact, I did a little research in preparation for this episode, and a wonderful doctor named Alice Ford, a renowned psychologist specializing in decision making, defines analysis paralysis as, quote, the inability to make a choice due to an excessive overthinking of all the possible outcomes and consequences, end quote. In other words, we get so paralyzed by the fear of making the wrong decision that we end up making no decision at all. And here's the kicker. Analysis paralysis isn't just about indecisiveness, but it can have real financial consequences. For example, missed opportunities, delayed career moves, even stagnant bank accounts. These can all be side effects of getting stuck in the tar sands of analysis paralysis. So I want you to think about analysis paralysis like spinning your tires in the snow. The more you spin your tires without pushing the car forward, the deeper into the snow rut you become, and the harder and harder it is to get out. In fact, there's almost an inverse relationship between spinning your tires and the forward movement of the wheel. In other words, if the wheel is moving, it must also be moving forward. If not, all that spinning energy will have to go somewhere else. Typically, that energy is going to be getting you digging down deeper, 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 making it harder and harder for you to push your car forward. Remember, energy has to go somewhere. And if it's not pushing you forward, it's going to be pushing you down. And in this case, you don't want to go down when your car is trying to move forward. It's harder to make decisions when you're overwhelmed. Usually, in an effort to make thoughtful decisions, people are, you know, they're going to be considering varying viewpoints, pros and cons, detailed pieces of information, potential outcomes, and they're going to consider other people's opinions. This is not a problem until it becomes a problem, when it starts to create a sense of confusion. As we get more and more confused, we can experience finding ourselves caught in this whirlwind of thoughts that might leave us feeling like making a clear decision, a confident decision, is maybe next to impossible. So this phenomenon of analysis paralysis really stops us from moving forward. That's the problem. It's not the evaluation. It's not the research. I love that. I love it when people are learning, but it's when you stop moving forward and keeps you swirling in your own thoughts. That's when this really becomes a problem. Now, actually, brain imaging studies suggest that overthinking increases activity in certain areas of the brain, which really lead to negatively impact performance on certain tasks. So, for example, researchers found that when participants were engaged in a more challenging drawing task, they exhibited more activity in the brain's prefrontal cortex, the area where the brain is mostly doing its thinking, its cognition, image recognition, that sort of thing. Now, this area of analysis paralysis can impact big projects in your life, like your career or marriage or relationships, especially finances. And typically, because these decisions are such a big part of your life, it can be so important to your overall well-being that it's understandable that these topics, you know, like marriage and finances and relationships and career, are going to lead to many more people getting stuck in analysis paralysis. So since many people have made the wrong choice, it can actually weigh heavily on our minds. It leads a lot of us to overthink and maybe ask a lot of people for their opinion and their ideas and their experience. So researchers found that these high-pressure situations under which like big topics in your life is what typically leads people to get into analysis paralysis. I remember the night before heading to Disneyland with my daughter. I was trying to find a good pair of walking shoes. And I looked all over town for a pair of shoes. We probably spent 2 or 3 hours just driving to the shoe store here and the department store over there. And I couldn't make up my mind because I knew Disneyland was coming the very next day. So I was under some pressure, you might say, not because I didn't want my feet to be under all that pressure the next day, but I was overwhelmed with choice. Do I get the expensive running shoe with the extended arches, or do I get something simple that can just get me through tomorrow? And this is just a stinking pair of shoes, right? Imagine bigger decisions like the trajectory of one's financial life. Should I use Wall Street or a bank on yourself approach to my financial future? That's a big conversation to have. I get it. So in our attempt to find clarity in decision-making through information gathering, reflection, we can end up getting consumed with our ideas and information and just get more confused, which ends up making us feel less confident. We don't feel like we can make a good informed decision, and then moving forward feels impossible. That tire is just stuck in the snow. Now, when I first heard about Bank on Yourself, I too got stuck in the tar sands of analysis paralysis. Several months, almost 7 months went by. All I wanted to do was read and understand. One question would lead to other questions, and I'd have to chase those down too. The gentleman who was working with my wife and I, our Bank on Yourself professional I worked with, he was very patient with me. even as I wrote him questions on every single page of the life insurance application. We spent almost 7 months just going from start to finish, just trying to get past all of my questions and ideas. I thought I needed to know everything about Bank on Yourself before taking the plunge. But honestly, it was really about something else. And I know anybody can experience just a state of analysis paralysis. And it can be scary to make a big change, especially in your finances. So here are a few characteristics I notice when people tend to struggle with analysis paralysis in my conversations with them. The first characteristic is rigid thinking. People who think strictly in terms of good or bad, all or nothing, correct, incorrect, they're going to find themselves confused when a decision doesn't clearly fit that category, one category or the other. Guys, there's both positives and negatives of making any financial decision. That includes Bank on Yourself. Along with all the good things you get in regard to establishing a Bank on Yourself design policy, like guaranteed growth, significant tax advantages, the ability to borrow and become your own source of financing, with all those goods, there's some drawbacks too, like the cost of insurance in the first few years, or the fact that I'll never get a giant upswing in the market inside my policy since it grows at a predictable, and some people say boring, rate of return. When we look at the decision with a yes or no mentality, we get more rigid. Everything becomes overwhelming. It might call us to stall out, not make a choice. Now, what I think is what people really need is a more emotional and really cognitive flexibility here. Could you possibly do both Bank on Yourself and investments? Could you dip your toe in the water, for example, for a smaller policy, or combine Bank on Yourself investments? A lot of people will take their policy cash value in order to invest. You know, it's not an either or, it's a both and with Bank on Yourself. So just see how it goes for a year or two and then reevaluate. Now, there's a client I have that I love working with who's an engineer. And you know what they say about engineers. Arguing with an engineer is sort of like wrestling with a pig in the mud. After a couple of hours, you realize the pig likes it. Okay, so anyway, this client is so cool and I love working with him now. And one of the things I really appreciate about him was that he would try out a financial vehicle like a Roth IRA with the stock market or a real estate project, or in this case, we were setting up a Bank on Yourself type policy. And then at the end of the year, he'd do a year-end review to see how his different accounts, different assets were doing. And those accounts that underperformed what they promised, he would cash out and then move them to winner assets. Now, over time, sort of like natural selection, more of his money goes into more winners. Now, I probably don't need to tell you that over the last few years, more and more of his funds have been going into a dividend-paying whole life insurance policy designed the Bank on Yourself way. Since Bank on Yourself policies have been meeting their promises for over 100 years, I have no fear that this policy is going to be around on his books for many years to come. So first of all, good for him for getting traction under his wheels. He's an engineer, and candidly, many engineers can get stuck in analysis paralysis. But he kept his wheels spinning and traction underneath them by implementing his policy along with his other financial portfolio. So good. Not just the rigid thinking, there's a second personality trait that I think gets people caught in analysis paralysis. That is perfectionism. Usually very careful people get stuck in perfectionism and thereby analysis paralysis. They want to be very careful. It's not in and of itself bad. Being careful is not bad, but perfectionism can lead to trouble when you're facing a decision about something like love or relationships or financial goals. Since there's so many unknowns, the potential outcomes in these decisions make it really tough to make the perfect decision. Even after setting up Bank on Yourself policies, clients don't have perfect financial lives. There's still mistakes that can be made. Problems still exist. People-pleasing is another trait that I think people find themselves caught in analysis paralysis when they have people-pleasing tendencies. If you're interested in making me happy, don't start a Bank on Yourself policy, okay? At the same time, don't pick an indexed universal life policy just because your buddy from college told you to. I was meeting with a client a little over 2 years ago who wanted to have my opinion and also get the opinion of his father-in-law, his tax accountant, his other insurance guy, about 12 other people before he made a decision. In fact, he's still trying to make that decision, and I don't expect I'll ever hear from him again. Sometimes we don't want to disappoint people. It might just be that we're very empathic people. That's great, which is a wonderful trait, to be warm and caring, but it can cause trouble when you're in the process of decision-making. If you're anticipating the feelings of others and you're, as a result, not making a decision about your own financial life, ask yourself, is the person that I'm so worried about offending or disappointing planning to be financially involved in my funding of my retirement? Are they willing to contribute financially to my financial future? If not, please set their perceived emotions aside, as you might be projecting something that's not even true. Okay, another trait that honestly is one of the tar sands that gets you stuck in this analysis paralysis is confidence. The issue around confidence. Those people who struggle with confidence also have trouble making decisions. For some people, it's simply that they just don't have much practice in making money decisions. It might be the first time they've made an independent financial decision for themselves. For example, maybe they're young and just out of college, or maybe they're just coming out of a divorce where they didn't have to handle money at all until now. So there are other people who have confidence issues because they've maybe made mistakes with money in the past. Maybe that's you. Maybe there's a certain amount of pain with making that poor choice in the past, and they don't want to make another money mistake. If you believe that you can't make good money choices, then it's going to be extremely difficult for you to make any decision. So you may want to start with just learning how to trust yourself again with small baby steps. Start with a small decision, one that makes a difference in your financial life, but one that you could recover from if it failed entirely. Now, I remember one deep Chicago winter. My car was parked on a neighborhood city street, and the waters had flooded the city street and then frozen over solid. I mean, we're talking 6 inches of solid ice surrounding the wheels of my car. Now, I took a shovel and a hammer, and most importantly, my good buddy Tim, and we went out that day and worked for hours to get that car free of the ice. Once the ice had been smashed and cleared, we put some sand and floor mats under each of our car tires. And then one of us gently tapped on the gas pedal while the other person was pushing behind the car with all his might. We didn't want to spin those tires to dig down deeper into the frozen ice that was laying below the car there. So there are a couple of cool lessons learned. We did get the car free, by the way. There's a couple of lessons learned that I want to share with you as I broke my car free from its paralysis. The first is I learned not to spin my tires so fast that it only makes the problem worse. So in this case, learning about financial tools should be followed by action. Take action when you have enough information to make a good informed decision. Now, I get it. This can sort of be problematic on the other side of the spectrum too. I mean, Nancy Pelosi was famous when she said she needed to pass Obamacare to find out what was in it and to understand the benefits for the American people. I suppose that's true. And I wouldn't want somebody to get a bank on yourself designed policy and then try to figure out why they bought it. Now, you certainly won't be able to enjoy its benefits, though, until you set it up and start using it. So there's a correlation and a relationship between learning and doing, learning and doing. And if somehow that comes out of whack or off balance, you're going to fall into the rut of analysis paralysis. So learn enough to make a good, informed decision. But what do you actually need to know? Do you need to know the bond maturity dates and the expected yields comprising the general account of the insurance company that you're considering? Or do you just simply need to know that there's a contractual guarantee that your money's going to grow every year regardless of market conditions? I'm going to say the latter for the most part. Don't worry about the particular details of certain aspects of bond yields necessarily, or interest rates or whatever. Just learn the basics. Sometimes getting into a bank on yourself policy can feel like navigating unpaved terrain. If it's unfamiliar to you, maybe it's a little scary to you too, but just like those Roman chariots eventually carved their own ruts, it's going to be important for you and your path to jump out of the ruts of other people and take steps toward where you want to go financially. And if you find yourself in a state of analysis paralysis, it's important to understand that there are steps you can take to slow down the overwhelm, the process of overwhelm down, or even to stop the problem of analysis paralysis altogether, the ruminating thoughts, the confusion, the worry that might make it nearly impossible to feel like you have a sense of agency in those moments. Number one, recognize what's happening. One step to getting out of that state is to realize that you're in it. Scan your body from head to toe. Do you notice tension, shallow breathing, nausea, other signals of stress that maybe your body is trying to send you? Allow yourself to become an observer of your own thoughts. Be honest when it feels like you're ruminating on things over and over again. Number two, give yourself the permission to be flexible. Rigid thinking, people-pleasing, or fear can lead to an inability to make a clear decision. So remind yourself it's okay to be flexible and imperfect sometimes. In fact, oftentimes, our fear of a poor outcome can feel heavy and permanent when it's really often not the case. I mean, really, what's the worst that could happen? Number three, remind yourself that you can do this. You're capable. When we're fearful of a potential outcome, it's usually because we're afraid we won't be able to get out of it, that we won't be able to navigate the path if it becomes too painful. So what feels dangerous to us is something we try to avoid. So just remind yourself that you've handled things before. Moments of challenge, stress, discomfort, you've been through it before. How have you made those decisions in the past? And incorporate that feeling of confidence that you can make good, informed decisions when you put your mind to it. Number four, stop asking other people's opinions that really aren't there for much more than the peanut gallery, okay? Much of what can lead to analysis paralysis is just reaching for more and more and more, whether that's information or perspectives or opinions of others. Make an intentional choice to stop asking people what they think you should do. Really, unless they're planning to be financially involved in your financial plan, you know, do they really have a stake in the game? Number five, limit forecasting. Stay in the present. Analysis paralysis often gets people focused on the future only, anticipating outcomes, worrying about perfection. What we're trying to do is avoid or minimize our pain, but we honestly can't predict some outcomes, even with our finances. So allow yourself to just be present, just take the next step, just make smaller, more immediate choices at the moment, and it'll allow you to have more light into where you want to take things in the future. And these are just a few steps for how you could break free from the rut and take control of your financial chariot once again. It might be a little bumpy, a little scary at first, but remember, the smoothest journeys often lead to the most spectacular destinations. If you want to go to the same place that the average American is going in the ruts of their financial life, you're going to end up with about 50 grand in a 401k and, you know, 5 years left to go before you retire. That doesn't sound like a financially solvent future for me. Okay, it is a good idea to be thoughtful in your decision-making. I get it. In fact, we do a pop quiz with every person we work with to make sure that they know enough to make a good informed decision. A state of analysis paralysis, though, can be a lot worse. It makes it harder to make good decisions, but there are a few steps, as I've mentioned, that you can take to break free. Notice how you're feeling. Allow yourself to stay flexible. Stay confident that you can make good, informed decisions. So ditch the outdated assumptions. Grab the reins of your own financial chariot and forge your own path, guys. I am so glad that we get to be on this journey with you. And as you are able, please let us know your success stories in overcoming the terrors, the tar sands of analysis paralysis. Get out there and make your own financial journey, find your destination, and send us the postcards once you get there. Hope you've enjoyed this episode of Not Your Average Financial Podcast, helping you think and live differently with your money, your economy, and your future.
This has been another episode of the Not Your Average Financial Podcast. To join a financial revolution and start thinking different about money, go to www.nyafinancialpodcast.com and click Request a Meeting.
The topics presented in this podcast are for general information only and not for the purposes of providing legal, accounting, or investment advice. On such matters, please consult a professional who knows your specific situation.